Hello and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. And joining me here in the League Express physio room, recuperating from a rather hectic Easter period, we've got Mr. Martin Sadler. Matthew Shaw is here. And joining us once again is Mr. Aaron Barra. So, hello everybody and welcome to the Total Rugby League show. And what a weekend that was. Crowds, great tries, controversy. But it's not just the Easter that's the problem. Obviously, a lot of matches played, but it's that third game the weekend after that's always a killer. And we'll have a fixture preview later in the show. We're also going to be talking the game in Wales as well, as we'll be joined by Wales Rugby League's Development Officer, Rob Davis. But before all of that, where do you want to start? Do you want to start about rule changes? Should we go there first?
No. Let's talk rugby.
Yeah.
Let's talk
that is rugby, isn't it? I watched that Castleford Wakefield match, and obviously Cass won by 2 points, and that came from a penalty, really. Yeah, which, yeah. You know, Aaron.
Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that was the difference in the end, and it did have a tinge of controversy to it, didn't it? I thought it was a great way to start the weekend. I think. As I said on social media, I've lost track of the amount of games this year where after an hour or so, you think, well, this is done, this is a formality, and then the games end up becoming nail-biters by the end.
It normally is to do with Wakefield,
yeah. They're normally either way ahead or way behind.
What is that about? They are the real entertainers, aren't they?
It's just weird.
Wakefield have done remarkably well, haven't they, over Easter? I mean, beating Leeds with a team that really you couldn't have imagined at the start of the season, if we're really honest about it, with so many players out, I think, you know, was a tremendous result for them. I didn't see the game, but, gosh, you know, they are ploughing on, aren't they? And, you know, looking at a decent contender for the playoffs.
You had a response, didn't you, from the chair, didn't you?
God, not this again.
Well, it's true.
I made the point merely that if they want to become a team that can compete for titles, they have to win more of the close games. The amount of games they lose by one score is just too high. I think of the games that they're involved in that regard, they've won about 30% of them. I'm sure if you compared that to champion teams, that would be more like 70-75. It was an observation rather than me having a go at them. And, oh, God, regretted making that call because everyone couldn't wait to get on my back. It's like I'd said something that was slanderous. Against him.
It's good though. It means your tweets matter a lot to a lot of people.
No, I don't know why.
There we go.
Me and Aaron got a complaint as well. We'll probably go on to this about us not mentioning Salford on Twitter, didn't we? On Good Friday.
Yeah.
Not only do we get abused for tweets we send out, we get abused for tweets we don't send out.
Yeah. Well, we at least put Salford on the front cover of League Express this week, you know, that kept them pretty happy, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we talk about the real changes? Because obviously there was Cass on Thursday, then Cass against Catalans. And
the Catalans Cass game was embarrassing.
Yeah, I thought it was. I think I spoke to the RFL this morning, actually, and, you know, I think they deserve a little bit of credit for the way in which they've dealt with this quite swiftly. You know, I'm sure they were considering these changes for a while, but I think Monday may have been the straw that broke the camel's back, for want of a better phrase, because, you know, and to be clear, again, you know, you go back to social media, a lot of Castleford fans thought that people were singling them out as cheats, but they were just part of the whole process. You know, Catalans were just as bad. Other teams
we've been discussing this week in, week out now. It's not just been Cass.
I mean, the throwing the ball into the player actually started against Cass.
Yeah, it did.
Well, let's just make one thing clear, though. There's a distinction between cheating and gamesmanship, and that's gamesmanship, not cheating. Because actually what they're doing is just taking advantage of the rules of the game as they stand.
They're not breaking
to win penalties.
Rules,
now,
yeah.
Players, I've been watching rugby league for longer than any of you, sadly, because I'm obviously older. And players have been doing that since kingdom come, really. You know, Alex Murphy was one of the greatest players ever to play the game. Alex took advantage of every rule possible. You know, he exploited every referee he ever played, you know, a game under, to win penalties when, frankly, sometimes he didn't deserve them. But he was just smarter than everybody else. Kieran Cunningham, what a great player he was. But let's think back to when he played, taking the ball from dummy half, running into a player who had not yet got back into position to win a penalty. Players do it all the time, and it's a sensible thing to do.
The Cunningham example is him taking advantage of a player that is as purposely not got back. If a player isn't square...
Not necessarily purposely, no. I mean, those players were sometimes trying to get back, but but hadn't done by the time he picked the ball and ran into them. Mm. So, you know, and he won a penalty, and it was quite, you know, the rules were right. That's you know, he was entitled to a penalty in those circumstances.
The difference,
but that was gamesmanship.
And what I would also say is that's an art, picking out that a player isn't square at marker. I don't think throwing a ball at a player that's on the floor that's cleared the ruck is an art. I think that is
no, but the player shouldn't be there, should he? You know, that's the point. You know, the
but
player,
it's rugby, it's going to happen,
the player has got... Well, the player is only there because he's not been able to inflict a dominant tackle
That player, you know, in particular is probably really happy that he's out of the way.
He's surrendered, hasn't he?
Yeah, they've surrendered and they're still getting paid. Yeah. If you never saw Kieran Cunningham if a player had rolled out of... If they'd lost the contact... Hang on, let me just make the point. Yeah. If they'd lost the contact and they'd rolled out of the ruck, you wouldn't see Kieran Cunningham, if they were on the floor to his side, run over and trip over him to win a penalty.
Well,
he wouldn't do that.
No, I'd concede that. But the thing is, the only point I'm making is that players do take advantage of situations to win penalties and always have done.
I think,
and that's the point. I mean, but so as far as I'm concerned, obviously you want to try and avoid that if you possibly can. But the danger is always that you make rule changes on a knee-jerk basis, and then you find other problems arise. And so it'd be interesting to see this weekend. Hopefully, none will. And hopefully it'll work smoothly. But those guys running back into the defensive line, with a dummy half about to pass the ball, if he now passes the ball and it hits that player, does he get penalised?
Well, that's
a dummy half.
This is the one thing
that's
out of the four that I'm not quite sure on.
Yeah.
So it says if you pass the ball in any direction and it hits the player, you will be penalised.
Yeah.
Well, surely that means that if you lose the wrestle, you roll out the back and you're running back to the defensive line, you can purposely stand in the way of the acting halfback.
But I think
go very near to the acting halfback.
That's
absolutely
then the referee's interpretation of whether that's deliberate, and that's why
I think the one thing that that ruling missed was the word intentional.
Yeah,
it didn't. Yeah. You know, if they're intentionally doing
but
it.
But the thing they had to get out for me, just from watching the games myself, was this nonsense of throwing the ball at an unnatural angle into the dormant marker.
That's clearly done deliberately, isn't it?
And it just doesn't.
I think we all agree on that.
It just doesn't look great aesthetically. You know, you can see you can very clearly see the dummy half throwing the ball in an unnatural angle. And I think the key phrasing in the statement was spirit of the game. You know, we see that mentioned in all.
But one referee did penalise a player, didn't he, recently?
Well, they did it.
Bradford Featherstone. Yeah.
The thing is, as well, though, if a player's rolled out of the back, the defence is already at a disadvantage because they've got they're either a marker short or a player in the defensive line short.
Mm.
For me, the guy acting halfback should be trying to look how he can distribute the ball to make the most of that, not try to win a cheap penalty anyway.
Mm.
So it's lazy play anyway, in my opinion.
Well, if it wins a penalty, it's smart play, isn't
it's
it? Let's face it, under the existing rules. But that will now change and we'll see what happens.
I mean, the Twitter video just had the word in it, which I think is the right
sums
noise.
Up. Yeah,
yeah, and like you said earlier, fair play to Darrafel for reacting.
I think so. Yeah, especially with that particular rule. Although Daryl Powell's quote is well worthy of a mention as well afterwards, when he said, "We're cheating to combat the cheating."
Yeah.
And he said, "The game's getting worse than football now," which I would probably draw a line at. I don't think I'd go. Yeah, I don't think I'd quite go that
it's
far.
He's probably not watched much football recently.
But "We're cheating to combat the cheating" is a very. It's practically it's an admission of guilt, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
But it's every sport has this problem, doesn't it? Let's face it. Rugby league isn't unique,
and you bend them.
You know, rugby union. I mean, God knows what the rules are in rugby union, but you know, players bend them in that.
Well, they've only just started clamping down on diving in recent years in football, haven't they?
With
bans and bookings and stuff. So it's, you know, I think, yeah.
But in all fairness, Martin, I did write down the word gamesmanship, not cheating earlier. So there we go. It's not been all bad, obviously, this past weekend. Great crowds on Good Friday, in particular 20,000 at Hull and 22,000 at Wigan v Saints. And, Rob Elston wanted that, didn't he? I mean... The onus was on the clubs, and they've done well.
Well, they've all
the
improved.
Clubs have done well.
They've all improved the way they promote their games, or nearly all of them haven't they?
Yeah.
You know, some of the social media stuff that they're doing, I think, led by Warrington. Warrington are pack on this one, and you know, Warrington are now regularly registering the biggest crowd for particular opponents. You know, they played Salford on Good Friday, and it was the biggest home gate for Salford, 11,000, nearly 12,000. So that, you know, that's great. That's coming on really well. And, you know, you do feel as though the game may be just turning a bit of a corner. I mean, one of the most impressive crowds, actually, over the Easter holiday was, I thought, Widnes's nearly 6,000 against Lee.
Mm.
You know, that was tremendous, wasn't it? And so, you know, I think we are going in broadly the right direction. And it's helped, I think, by all three competitions being really tight and exciting and interesting. You know, there are not many games that you wouldn't want to see now, are there? Really, let's face it. They've all got a lot of meaning to them, and it's great to see. I think.
Dare we use the hashtag Positive Rugby League?
No, not on this show. No,
we're not there yet, though.
Look, you bring that up. There's been people willing to stick the boot into Super League at every juncture this year, but the numbers speak for themselves over Easter. As for the whole weekend, I think the aggregate was up 9,000, maybe 10,000 for Easter Monday included. So, you know, Good Friday and Easter Thursday alone is one thing, but across the whole weekend, the numbers are up. So, and you know, like we say, it's not just a Super League thing. Let's give the Championship massive credit where it's due. I think Sheffield's crowds have doubled this season. York's are up. I'm sure Bradford's are up because on the basis of promotion, Fev's are up. So, great, you know. And Keighley in League One, I think Keighley are pulling in 1,000 fans on average. You know,
yeah, which is great.
Well, the West Cumbria Derby was nearly 2,000. I'm pretty sure last year it was only like 1,200.
Yeah. So they were celebrating the fact they got 1,000, and now they're getting fantastic.
Well,
fantastic.
It was one of the things, wasn't it, Robert Elston set out on his manifesto. And, you know, you say that, you know, there's been people criticising Robert Elston for certain things. So I think when Super League gets something right, he deserves a little bit of credit. But the clubs take the lion's share of it for me because they've done the hard work here. It'll be interesting to see. He's got a media briefing later this week, Robert Elston. It'll be interesting to see how loudly he shouts from the rooftops about it or whether he does defer it onto the clubs, because I think, like I say, the clubs deserve a hell of a lot of credit.
To be fair to Elston, if you look at the big wins, the rule changes have been a big success in terms of shot clock and everything.
Which was something. Well, I was skeptical about Golden Point, but you can't deny that every time it's happened, it's been exciting. It's been exciting.
It's
manufactured excitement in a way.
But so what?
And you know, we might come to a point where we have a Golden Point game that lasts 10 minutes and
finishes in a draw.
Which would be a bit ridiculous. But I still feel actually that a team that loses on Golden Point deserves a point. You know, whether it's
I think there's a valid argument there. There is a valid argument there. But that has been a win. Attendances for me have been a win.
I think so far it's been the strongest Super League season.
Exposure
as
well on social media.
And it's not just attendances and, you know, social media activity that's good. It's that I think there are a lot of star players this year. Yeah. I think there are a lot of players who are making a mark.
Well, they've always been there, but this has been a conscious push that they've put them out more.
I think so. I think that's fair.
Maybe, I think that is true.
And the fans have got on the back of it. I mean, as an example, the Lachlan Coote song.
Yeah.
I think off the exposure he's got and everything that's been said about him, that song has been created. And that'll be one of the most memorable songs of this season and will probably be sung for...
Almost every team's got a star, haven't they? That's the thing. And you look down the league, I don't think you've really seen before. I think there's probably at least 10 teams who have got a star. You know, I don't want to disrespect off the top of my head OKR and London and probably Huddersfield, but everyone else has got a star that you can build a team around.
Well, OKR got Danny Maguire, who's a star, isn't he? Let's face
it. Everyone else has got someone you can build a team around.
Even Huddersfield.
And a marketable English player as well. You know, you look, Jake Connors is the prime example at Hull, isn't he? You know, Hull have been a little bit of a mismatch of older heads and sort of steady players over the last few years, again, without disrespecting anyone. But in Connor, there's a genuine bona fide star there who could play for England and Great Britain for the next decade.
And the overseas, but I mean, Fafita's the obvious one.
I know Johnston's injured, but
it's good to see. It's going to bring people through the gates. And I think, I don't think it's a surprise to see where we're at.
The whole aim of all of this is the new TV contract from 2022. And I know, you know, the people, you know, Robert Elston and the RFL have said, well, they'll start negotiating, you know, in a year or so's time. You can't wait till then. You know, all the time you're thinking and planning for the new TV contract. It's going to be so crucial. The Championship clubs, I think, are already accepting that they're probably not going to get much.
They're going to have to get their own deal.
They're going to have to get their own deal, which is one reason why they're quite keen to have New York and Ottawa and other overseas clubs coming into their competition.
And probably why they've started putting a concerted effort into their own marketing as well.
You can look at some of the clubs in Championship.
They're doing pretty well.
They've done some brilliant promo stuff. You know, the Thompson Tete Terminator stuff, the thing with Dewsbury. You've got Swinton, who are putting some really good content out at the minute. I think Toronto, obviously, are good in that regard. I think there are clubs I've missed there for a fact.
Newcastle.
Newcastle agree. There's loads. And clubs are, I think after a long time, clubs are actually realising that they can't afford to sit and wait for handouts and have to go out and show some.
Didn't Ralph say, you know, there's more that you clubs need to do to get their funding. One of them is engagement on
social media.
I've
been a big defender of the RFL on this for a long time. I think that the clubs have just waited for the RFL to promote the games for them.
Yeah.
I think the clubs, and obviously there's a responsibility there, but the clubs have to go and do it themselves. They have a duty to promote their own games.
When you give handouts, it's all too easy for clubs to hold their hand out and just take the money and do nothing.
But haven't the RFL said as well that one of the key performance indicators and one of the sort of components of how much funding you get is how many Our League members you've got, so they're encouraging the clubs to get people watching Our League, signing up to Our League, which then makes more money if the RFL gets more money. So it's kind of a happy circle, isn't it?
I do feel like we are slowly making the strides forward to being in the modern world.
And I think the RFL being able to look after their competitions and a dedicated team being able to look after Super League is what the game was crying out for. I know some people were fearful of a split, but
it's not turned out bad, though, has it?
You know, the RFL were spinning too many plates. They couldn't prioritise. Super League is where the lion's share of the money comes into the game, and the RFL were better served promoting England, Challenge Cup, and the Championship and League.
But you've just mentioned the concern I still hold for the RFL with this split, and that's financial.
Yeah.
With Super League having, you know, that's where a lot of the money is. I do worry for the RFL financially. I think the Challenge Cup debacle pretty much sums all that up, where they are financially.
It is a challenge for them. There's no doubt about it, isn't it? And the one massively disappointing thing about the season so far is that Challenge Cup crowds have been terrible. You know, they really are still terrible, and
difficult
whatever the future and the future TV contract is and so on, they've got to get hold of the Challenge Cup and work out how they can bring it back to prominence.
It's been the one disappointment this year. Because the Championship has been really good, and to be fair to the Challenge Cup, I don't actually think the cup itself, the results and the games, have been that bad. We've seen an amateur team in Fatto Heath go really far.
Games have been fine. It's just that the attendances have been terrible.
We've seen Championship clubs, shocks, Super League clubs,
It's not strictly a problem limited to rugby league, though, is it? Know, Matt, that the early rounds of the FA Cup,
awful.
I watch Bradford City, who get 16,000 every week.
It's actually getting further into the competition year on year that the interest starts to drop.
Right.
People don't seem to care now until the quarterfinals.
I think now this
maybe
is the
semi-finals in 5 years if it's not careful.
This is the first round now of the cup, isn't it? When the big boys are in, that you really start to sort of see the interest ramp up.
Let's put that on the ideas board, right, for our Total Rugby League Show special, pre-recorded live from Wembley. Just putting that idea out there. Anyway, for later in the season. But we do have to talk about round 13, because obviously that's coming up this weekend. We talked about the attendances from last weekend. Proof's in the pudding. Are they going to filter on into this weekend? There's a big game taking place, and the question is, can Catalan stop Saints once again? Is it possible?
No.
On the road?
No. And can I be honest, I don't think it's the biggest game of the week. By any stretch. I think the biggest game of the week is Leeds v Hull KR.
That's my last one to talk about for that reason.
Start
with the worst ones. Build up.
Okay.
I'm starting with the team top of the table, and then the big fixture is my last one.
Like the Challenge Cup. Start with the games no one cares about. And it ramps up as we get towards the end.
What game's first on? Challenge Cup?
No, I'm just making a comparison to what we were talking about.
We ask the same question every week, and I do feel like we're repeating ourselves, but Saints are just going to keep winning. The question is, are the wheels going to come off like it did last year?
Well, I spoke to Danny Richardson last week about that, and he said, you know, we're all a little bit more conscious this year that while we're playing well at this time of the year, we all know that if we don't deliver in September, what we're doing now means absolutely nothing, which almost felt like a bit of an admission that they didn't really acknowledge that last year. They didn't acknowledge that there might be a time where they'd have to park it for a few weeks, or they'd have to, you know, they'd have to make sure they were ready for the playoffs. I think maybe they just assumed that they'd click into the playoffs and click into the grand final. And the same happened with the Challenge Cup, didn't it, as well? You know, they've massively underperformed in the semi-finals against Catalans when they were
huge favourites.
That
was the biggest shock result last year,
so.
I think so. You know, I really do
but
think
they look a little bit more. They look a little bit more rounded, sans Barber this year, and with Coote at fullback.
What's really interesting is they've lost Luke Thompson now to injury for a few weeks.
And Percival.
But they've got Matty Lees to come in at prop forward, who I think is a tremendous prospect.
Do you know what the problem
you know,
I have?
It's almost to their advantage, actually, to lose Luke Thompson at this point in the season.
The problem I have with Saints is that ultimately we can talk about how brilliant they are. We're only doing what we did last year. But at the end of the year, they came away with nothing.
Yeah, but on that notion, I get that. But then what are you saying, that we can't discuss anything until September?
No, of course not. Of course not. But what I'm saying is, the proof, ultimately, in Saints' season will be in the Champions League. Yeah,
I think they realise that more than anybody.
I think the only thing we can guarantee is, if the wheels do come off, we're not going to really necessarily jump in with both feet and be really critical of them.
In the here and now, they've won 11 out of 12.
They've been sensational.
The biggest challengers look to be Warrington and Saints Hamad Warrington, really, absolutely. To be honest. They looked a far better side.
The derby's always supposed to be close, and they dismantled Wigan.
Yeah.
What about Catalans? Because they've suddenly got some momentum behind
weird.
Them.
They're a weird team. They're like Hull FC and Salford.
They were the big success story, apart from St Helens, from the Easter period.
Are they dark horses for the playoffs this year? Because it didn't look like they were going to do
it. I think there are a few. For me, I put them in the same category as Hull FC and Salford, that they are just ridiculously inconsistent.
I put them in the same category as Hull FC, not Salford. I think there's a clear... I think the top six are playing for the top five, and I think the bottom six haven't got enough consistency or quality to challenge for the points.
Salford are a perfect example, aren't they, of a team that can win at Warrington and win comfortably, but they lose at home all the time.
They don't have enough depth, I fear. You know, look, I hope Hastings is fit for the whole year, because he's a quality player, but if they were to lose Hastings for a period, they'd be in big trouble. You know, that's my worry, that they're only one bad injury away from a little bit of a crisis.
I think the only thing, how many points have Salford got now?
Well, they lost on Easter Monday, didn't they? So they've got
10 from 12 games.
10 from 24.
I mean, talk of them being potential relegation, I don't see
Nobody thinks that.
Some people are tipping them to go down. I don't see it.
You know my thoughts on that.
We'll come back to Salford in a second, because they've got an interesting game this weekend. But let's talk about Warrington against Huddersfield. Mm. Warrington bouncing back somewhat against Hull KR. Huddersfield.
Ah, they're a weird team.
Inconsistent, you know, by definition, aren't they?
I did ask you the question about 3 weeks ago, are Huddersfield back now?
And I said no.
Are they back yet?
No.
No?
I'm going to make the same issue as with Huddersfield as I have with Salford, that without Gaskell, they are a far worse team than they are with him. And there is no doubt in Lee Gaskell's ability. He played in a grand final as a teenager, at halfback, and won one, I think. But he gets too many injuries, unfortunately. And he's a class act. Without him, I think it were the halfbacks, Frawley and Oliver Russell.
Ollie Russell.
Mm. Which, you know, for the jury's still out on Frawley, I think. You know, Oliver Russell's, there's a lot of pressure there on a teenager's shoulder. You know, they're having to play Griggs at fullback from time to time, which I'm sure wasn't the plan when they brought him in as a coach. So I think Huddersfield are probably in a group of three teams, maybe four, who were too good to go down but not good enough for the top five.
I think that's true. No danger of relegation.
How important was that win against London?
Vital.
Oh, my God. Yeah, massive.
Absolutely.
Even if they were quite fortunate to nick it at the end, judging by what I've seen on the highlights.
Yeah, I thought it was
that must have been, I mean, I didn't see that game, but it must have been a great show by London, wasn't it? Because everybody thought that Huddersfield had won fairly comfortably in London.
Yeah.
And everybody thought, you know, they'll stroll it really at home. But they didn't. And, you know, all credit to London for playing so well.
London's next couple of games are really interesting.
Well, Salford this weekend.
Salford this weekend on Saturday. I mean, how important...
Is that in London?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that is a big game.
Yeah.
The thing with London is, I mean, you know...
I can't see London winning it, though. Salford win away, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And they're the kind of team who will be at home on a pitch like London as well.
I would agree. I just think with London, you looked at some of the recent results and you think, ooh, no,
the bubble's burst.
I still maintain that over 29 games, I think London are more than likely to be the weakest team, unfortunately.
I'm still not convinced by Hull KR.
Unless they sign some more players, of course, which is always a possibility.
Well, the thing with London, the beauty that London have is, going into a market, they are the ones who can buy. They are the ones with cap space. So they probably do have a decision to make, I think. Yeah. Do we put some money in and try and stay up?
Do we
risk trying to stay up and not break the bank?
It's always interesting, isn't it, to see which clubs do sign players after the start of the season and what impact those players have. I mean, Cassiano at Catalans looks to be a real good signing. Yeah. you know,
Caton Brown at Wakefield. You know, they signed him out of necessity, but wow, he's settled back in.
Two tries in his debut.
He played centre on Monday and was great again.
Let's talk about Wigan v Castleford this weekend. Yeah. Wigan bouncing back from that Saints defeat with a win over Salford.
Cass, along with Wakefield and Hull KR, have the worst injury lists at the minute. Don't think that's unfair for me to say.
I think so.
I don't think it's any shock that Hull KR have struggled, and it's not a surprise that Castleford have been struggling for a month.
Most of Cass's injuries are in the pack, aren't they? Which is just massive in this day and age. You know, Millington is still a phenomenal player.
They still look reasonably strong, don't they? No, they still look reasonably.
They still beat Wakefield on Thursday.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this is a really big game for Wigan. You know, Wigan need to get a good home win, I think, for their fans.
That was the downside of having such a big crowd. There was more people streaming out, wasn't there? That is the image at the end of the
Wigan walk.
I was there with about 10 minutes left. There was about 7,000, and 6,000 of them were Saints fans. Yeah. And there's literally no one in the home ends. Martin's right. They need to put a show on for the fans this weekend more than anything. Almost more important than 2 points is to go out and show that they're going the right way, because they've disappointed at home too often.
Wigan's an odd one as well, isn't it? Where are they in the league now? 10th?
I think they're 9th now.
Have we got to the bottom yet, whether Adrian Lamb's going to stay to the end of the season?
No, staying till the end of the season. But I think he's a safe bet for the job long term. I think the players seem to like him. I think there's a feeling that they're in transition a little bit, and they're probably going to be in further transition next year when Williams, Luluai and probably O'Loughlin all go. So there's a big overhaul there. What I would say about Wigan, and having seen the highlights on Monday, is Hardacre's getting there. Hardacre's looking the business again. Really getting back to his best.
I think they've got this young kid, Harry Smith, haven't they, on the sidelines? He was in the 19, I think, but didn't play on Monday. He's very close to making his
another
debut.
Another kid played, didn't he, as well? Amir Burrow, he played.
Yes,
well.
I don't know much about him.
But they're churning more kids out, aren't they?
They always have done. But, you know, those kids... I mean, Harry Smith people really talk highly of, don't they? And, you know, he was outstanding when the England Academy meet the Aussie Combined High Schools. So I'm really looking forward to see how he plays.
The problem is that if those three, I just said, all do go next year, while it's great that the kids are coming in, they are going to need some experience alongside them.
And if they lose Williams, which is widely speculated...
They're going to need two halfbacks.
I can see a really, really tough 2020 for Wigan on that.
It depends on how they're planning, doesn't it? Because they can obviously see that better than anybody, what the problem is.
Sport.
So you'd think they'd be planning for it, wouldn't you? You'd think they would have their eyes on one, if not two, halfbacks.
Sport's cyclical, isn't it, though? And in this day and age, fans want everything now. And in reality, 25 years of Super League, it's only really St Helens who've been there every single year. You've got to accept that sometimes you've got to go through a bit of short-term pain
think you can't have the same teams winning everything.
The unfortunate thing for Wigan is they have probably foreseen over 5-6 years and getting to 2020 and the likes of a lock and go in. I think that the unfortunate thing for them is they probably saw the team that would take them forward at that time, the senior pros, would be John Bates, Sam Tompkins, Williams.
Ryan Sutton's playing really well for Canberra, and
they're not going to be there because they've left under various reasons. So that next team that they had set up has been disbanded.
They're going to have to go spend some money, aren't they?
Mm. And that doesn't always work. You only have to ask these rhinos about that.
Well, should we go to... That's a good segue. I was going to leave Leeds last, but you've made me jump to him. Leeds against Hull KR this weekend.
Biggest game of the weekend.
Huge.
Where are we at?
Saw Leeds Monday. They won't be the last team to lose at Wakefield this year, I will say that, and they certainly will be teams who go to Wakefield and lose by more than 2 points.
But this, given where Leeds are at the moment, this is a must win, isn't it? Against Hull KR.
It's got to be, probably. I don't think they're in as bad a place as some people think they are. I think they're going okay. Look, they lost at third and they beat Huddersfield over Easter. On paper, it's not the worst ever. Again, Leeds are a lot like... Leeds now are where we see Wigan in 2020. This is a transition period. You know, they've got a lot of young kids coming through. I thought Harry Newman was very good the other day. He's going to be an absolute superstar. Owen Trout played 80 minutes in the back row, up against Paulie Paulian for Fita, and he held his own. So they've got some good kids coming through. The concern is are the senior players doing enough at the moment? You know, Dave Ferner blatantly doesn't know his best team. That is 100% certain. Yeah. Because Lolla here alone, you know, where do you pick
him? Well, he's got to play him at fullback, hasn't he?
Where do you play Walker?
Yeah, well, that's the point. But why sign Lolla here when you've got a kid like Walker coming through?
I agree.
You know, that shows bad planning by
somebody. I know of another Super League club that tried very hard to sign Lolla here last year and were only interested in him playing fullback because they didn't think he was
a
halfback.
That's his position.
Played test footballer.
Yeah. What about Hull KR? That's two thumpings they've had over.
Just injuries.
Well, they're just down to the bare bones, aren't they? They're bringing in kids we've never heard of, I'm afraid, and you know, those kids are having to be on the bench and so on.
They've lost Carver for 6 weeks now as well, haven't they?
And Masoy is five, I think.
It's just disastrous.
It's going to be tough for them.
This is what it often comes down to.
However, third game over Easter is always the most unpredictable round of the season, I will say that.
It's always the one where most injuries are, I hate to say.
I mean, Hull KR won at Wakefield earlier in the season, didn't they?
Yeah.
Let's face it.
And they
thumped
Leeds at Hull KR.
It's a good segue, and let's go to Wakefield now. The last game to talk about Hull against Wakefield this weekend. I mean, Wakefield, good win against Leeds.
Well, Hull, what a weird side Hull are. I mean, you know, thumping Hull KR and then getting thumped themselves.
Yeah.
By St. Helens.
There's no middle ground, is
there? And I was surprised to see Lee Radford picking Jake Connor at full back, because I think Jake Connor is the best standoff in the game, personally. And I know Albert Kelly's, you know, but I think the ideal combination for them is to have Connor and Sneed and then Kelly coming on, as he did against Hull KR, and adding that sort of running ability, that attacking ability. You know, when Connor did then move to fullback when he came on in that particular game. Mm. So, you know, I think that's the ideal for Hull FC, but to start with Connor at fullback, I think is not a good move. And but Hull, they seem to win easily or lose easily, don't they? It's
well,
really
Lee Radford's quote was quite telling after Monday, I thought, and it sums up where Super League is. He said, you know, we've been thumped by Saints and Warrington and we're holding our own against everyone else. That's pretty much where Super League is at the minute. They're just on another level, and I think that's right. I think those two teams are on another level, and I think the other eight or nine are playing for third, fourth and fifth.
I mean, you do have to say, this is the salary cap working, isn't it? Where you've got this level of
on the salary cap. Wakefield have got 60% of their cap sat on the sidelines at the minute, and they're running third. Chris Chester's the best pound-for-pound coach in the game, bar none. 100%.
You've got to say that, haven't you?
100%. The thing you'd say about Wakefield and how far they've come in the last few years is that they had 12 first-teamers out on Monday, but yet they still put a stronger team out than they were doing 3 or 4 years ago when their entire first team was fit. You know, that's how far the club's
come. It comes all back down to what ultimately is the key for clubs working under salary cap, is who recruits best. Wakefield, since Chris Chester has come in, have recruited better than any other side.
Correct.
I was going to say, it's Lee Kershaw, isn't it, Wakefield? Yes. That is superb, because he's been at Oldham on loan now for a season and a half.
And what
and
a great
they
advert
love,
for
they,
that,
by they the love him at Oldham, and he's gone there, and he's done what he's done there.
Chris Chester said after the game, he rung Scott Naylor up on Friday after Oldham played and said, look, we're going to have to pull him back in. And he said he was devastated, you know, because he fit in so well at Oldham. But it's a great advert for lower league rugby being a good breeding ground, because Lee Kershaw came in and looked like a Super League player.
But it's also a good advert for loaning players, not the dual red
Correct.
System. Loaning players.
Correct, so that they're there regularly.
Yeah,
I agree.
Anyway.
Corey Aston as well, by the way, who's been out on loan at Newcastle, comes back in.
He's been out on loan everywhere, hasn't he, Corey Aston, it seems. But it was great to see him getting his chance at last, then playing again against
More
Catalans.
Young British players playing than I can remember. I think, you know, I think we're all four halfbacks, British and Cass Wakey. Ben Reynolds, Ryan Hampshire, Corey Aston and Jake Truman.
Yeah.
All young British halfbacks, great.
And I mean, the amount of those England Academy lads that are currently playing senior rugby.
Absolutely, they're nearly all breaking through, aren't they?
Yeah. I can't remember it ever being
clubs
like that
afraid
before.
To throw them in, which is great as well.
I can't ever remember it being quite like that before. Good news.
Speaking of the Championship and League One, we'll go to that now. We do have to cover the Championship. Matthew, sorry, mate. Just to say, we'll be covering off Welsh Rugby League in a second as well, as we'll be speaking to Rob Davis from Wales Rugby League. But Championship first, 6 wins from 6 now for Bradford, 2 wins over the weekend for Toronto, 2 wins for Batley as well, and 2 wins for Sheffield, including an epic win over Toulouse.
Who are now level with Toulouse with a game in hand, by the way. You know,
they are.
Remind me who said that Sheffield were dark horses for playoff boys.
Yeah, they're not dark horses now.
No.
They're dark horses for promotion now.
How the heck does Mark Aston manage to do that, what he does, though? I mean, he must be operating on an absolute shoestring.
They always punched above the weight. They went full-time, which was comfortably the biggest mistake they ever made.
Yeah. Mm.
And then they've had 3 years of being rubbish.
Well, they lost all their better, like Don Brambani left, didn't he, and stuff like that.
And they weren't playing in Sheffield, of course, whereas they now are.
It's been a shocking...
It's a very basic ground, isn't it?
It's been a shocking 3 years. But what he did, he recruited the best players from the teams in the bottom half.
Yeah,
like other than Jason Anthony Thackeray being the exception.
Yeah, Jason Crooks, Joe Fyle, people like that.
Look, Josh Guzdek, all the top players at the clubs that were in and around them. And he's put them together into a winning side.
Mm.
And for that, he deserves enormous credit. And the players do as well, because the players he's taken there, Thackeray excluded probably, have really just been championship plodders without being too disrespectful. That's what they've been. They've been okay championship players. They've come together and become one of the big forces in the league. And it's a remarkable story. They've done superbly.
But I'm a really great fan of rugby league in Sheffield. I worked in Sheffield for 20 years, before coming here. And, you know, I'm convinced that with a decent side in Sheffield, rugby league could have a really big following there.
It's like York, isn't it? It's not quite in Heartlands, but just close enough to build on.
Exactly, yes. If you're spreading out.
Yeah. Start
those,
close.
Those places are the places. And it's great to see a World Cup game there.
I do sadly have my sceptics on whether it can ever crack it. And purely because, having worked, obviously, away from this job, I work on football and do a lot of work for Radio Sheffield.
The amount of football teams in there, it's big.
They've got I think it's almost an impossible
job.
They've
got a stranglehold, but,
it's more than a stranglehold.
You know, I worked in Sheffield for many years, and there was a significant amount of interest there in rugby league, certainly when I was there. That was partly because Gary Hetherington was such a smart operator when he used to run the club in those days. But I see. You only need 2,000 or 3,000 people.
Well, that's the
supporting
thing.
This idea of
football towns and all that. I mean, I'm obviously from Manchester, and you know we've got two quite big clubs. But enough about FC United.
Yeah.
About in the late '90s. That was when Manchester Storm was in their pomp, and they were getting 17,000 at Manchester Arena. That's ice hockey. If you market it right, then you could get anything
The best example is Melbourne, clubs. Isn't it? Where everybody said rugby league would never draw a crowd in Melbourne. They're averaging about 17,000 or 18,000 now. Yeah.
They've got to find a way to do like what the Steelers have done in ice hockey. They've got their own little niche.
Yeah.
And if they can find a way to do that, to be fair to them, the crowds are up this year.
And just before we move on to League One only had one game this weekend. Championship had two games, like Super League did. And for part-time players, that's
awful.
Quite a lot, isn't it? Maybe that needs looking at maybe.
Yeah, spread it thinner across the weekend.
But anyway, League One, Derby weekend on Good Friday. Scholars won the Battle of the South against Coventry. A great win for Keighley over Doncaster and a great crowd as well. Hunslet stayed top after beating Oldham, and Whitehaven beat Workington in front of a crowd of just shy of 2,000 there. And that does lead me on to the breaking news on Tuesday night, which was Leon Price going out, and I might as well come to you first. I mean, they have suffered a couple of defeats recently. But they did get to the Challenge Cup quite advanced stage to take on Leeds. So
I've obviously got a vested interest, haven't I? You know, but mad decision, I think. You know, they were ninth the season before Leon took over, and he got them to within 80 minutes of promotion on two occasions last year. You know, let's be honest, that farcical setup in the playoffs. I think he had half a team at Swinton, and they still took them very close. He's got some big names up there. The fans are in favour.
Why have they made that decision?
We need to know if it's what the thinking was behind this. Was it purely based on field?
Decision like this is always, you can't be judged until you see who the replacement is, can you? You know,
I think, where are they? Seventh in the league at the minute.
They've won three and lost three.
They're outside the playoffs.
I mean, look, for me, if they hadn't have got promoted at the end of the year, I could understand it. But to do it now, is it, for me, and this is me being cynical, Is it something more than on the field?
Well, he's put a squad together that should be challenging for promotion. At the minute, they probably are underperforming, but if we're in the market of sacking coaches after six games, then, you know,
I think what we can safely say, though, and you can look at Newcastle as well, we're getting rid of Jason Payne. I think clubs are looking at the fact that New York and Ottawa are coming in, knowing this is probably their last chance to get promoted for two years. So it's probably panic.
It's a scramble.
Probably panic.
But
which in one sense is what makes it so interesting as well, isn't it? Because it is ultra competitive. But Leon made some quite nice comments, I thought, about Workington after being dismissed. You know, it didn't sound as though he was being bitter, did he? I don't think.
No. I think he's disappointed, obviously, because he wanted to carry on the job. I just hope, like I said on Tuesday night, I hope there's a job for him somewhere because, you know, he's one of the best players of his generation. He's obviously got something about him as a coach to have held down a post for 18 months and take Workington on as he did. You know, whether there's a Super League club that might think, well, he could do a job with our halfbacks or he could do a job with our attack. You know, I'm sure there's a job for him somewhere.
Or even in the Championship or League One in West Yorkshire.
Just before we move on to other matters, that's a big job at Workington Town, isn't it? Because that is a well-assembled squad
with a
good crowd behind it nowadays.
At the end of the day, like we've just mentioned, if Workington don't go up this year, and you can say this for any club, the likelihood is they aren't going up again for a couple of years.
So, well, it depends on whether there's a league restructure, doesn't it? Which is not beyond the realms of possibility.
not in this sport.
But, you know.
Even now, I suspect there'll be one for next season. Yeah.
Well,
anyway.
You never know. But of course, the other thing about Workington is that they are having a new stadium built, which will be, you know, a really nice facility. Apparently,
the football club Workington Reds have just been relegated out of the NPL as well, so it's not going well at the moment.
The next appointment is key because look, I think what Newcastle have done right. Whether you think they should have got rid of Jason Payne or not, on the surface, it's a harsh call. I think what they've done is they've appointed a young coach who's probably going to give him some longevity.
They've got Dennis Betts in charge of the whole thing, haven't they?
And Finnegan will help see out that long-term vision that they've got. I think what Workington need to do is Workington need to sit down and do what any clubs need to do. What are they? What do they want to be? What is the goal for them?
Do you need to do what Whitehaven's done and just got Gary Charlton in from the local scene?
Well, it depends what they want to be. Do they want to be a club that breeds Cumbrian players and is Cumbrian centric, or does it want to be a club? What does it want
to be? Well, Leon Turt certainly took them away, took them down the route of more established players from outside Cumbria, didn't he? Look at who's there at the minute: Fufu, Moy Moy, Danny Tickle. I know Oliver Wilkes is from there, isn't he? But he's gone back. He's in charge this weekend. So there were a lot of big names there, and it's probably quite a big, there's some big characters there for a new coach to go in and sort of handle. So it's a big appointment for what it's a bold move.
It's interesting though, isn't it, that Whitehaven is second in the league, having beaten Workington.
Can I tell you
what
the bigger point is that we've kind of ignored? The team that's third in the league, it's London.
Can I just say something? While Aaron and Martin were talking, I turned to Matthew and I do the League One show, and I went to Matthew and went, right. Is that right? London Scholars are third. Oh. That is amazing.
Very,
anyway,
very tight win over Coventry, actually, on Friday.
Yeah, sure. But that's pretty good, though, isn't it?
Great for them, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They beat Workington, didn't they?
Well, but a sign of how early we are in the League One season is that we're all purring about London Scholars, and rightly so, and we're all questioning why Workington have just sacked the coach. And there's 1 point between them on the league table.
Look, it does smack.
1 point between them.
On the face of it, the decision to sack him smacks of panic.
Five teams split by a point at the minute.
It smacks of panic. It's just, so it'd be interesting to know what has triggered them into that.
Let's talk about the other derby. Oh, I should say, for all the breaking news with regards to Workington Town, as well as any other club, whether they decide to get rid of their head coach or changes, totalrl.com is the place to go.
And it's also just worth saying that on Newcastle Thunder, Mick Hogan, the managing director, is actually on the Backchat show this week on Free Sports at 5 o'clock.
There was one other derby which happened at the weekend. That was the Welsh derby, which North Wales Crusaders won quite convincingly in the end over West Wales Raiders. That's been a decent start to the season for West Wales, but safe to say it's not going.
Well, I noticed we were talking about London Scholars. They fielded a couple of players at Coventry on Good Friday that have just signed from West Wales Raiders.
They're certainly running teams closer this year, but they've got to win a game soon. I'm sorry, they've got to.
I mean, I think everyone was thinking that was the game that they could possibly win, given where North Wales were. It's all off the pitch that's going really well at West Wales Raiders. Kim Williams has come in as head coach. He's doing some cracking work, not just with the team he's got, but also in the community game in South Wales in particular. The Southern Conference kicks off this weekend with Torvine Tigers, Valley Cougars and Cardiff Blue Dragons taking to the field. The Welsh Premier is having another season, and there's extra junior sides joining the fun and games in South Wales as well. Plus, as well, some coaching courses have been taking place recently, and that's been led by Wales Rugby League as well as West Wales Raiders, Kim Williams. And on Tuesday, I caught up with the head of player development at Wales Rugby League. Here's Rob Davis.
This year, we qualified 12 new match officials earlier in the year, and we've just qualified 8 level 2 coaches. And identified 4 candidates to move forward as coach educators, which is great. And we've now put aspirant candidates from all the clubs. We've got 30 level 1 candidates to get through between now and the back end of May. So yeah, busy few weeks ahead, but great for the game.
Absolutely, and these coaches and referees are needed as well, because the community game in particular in South Wales is developing quite nicely.
The junior game especially is just going from strength to strength. I think we're progressing this year to 26 teams playing across 4 age grades at 7 different clubs. So yeah, there's plenty of opportunities there. I think they're scheduled, 112 13-a-side fixtures plus 24 nine fixtures. So it was one of the things we've looked to do, is sort of diversify what we offer rather than just a traditional 13-a-side game. So we're looking very much nines at under 19 age group, which is obviously a tricky age group with people going off to university, starting work, where we lose a lot of players. So we just keep them involved as much as we can. We're going to try nines midweek, hopefully it's a success, and hopefully some 13-a-side clubs will blossom back out of that. If not, those players just feed into their team's open age side. So exciting times.
Absolutely. And this weekend, obviously, the Southern Conference kicks off. And in that conference, we've got the Valley Cougars, Torvine Tigers and the Cardiff Blue Dragons. They've also got A teams in the already successful Welsh Premier, which kicked off a couple of seasons ago. And they're joined by other community sides. So the pathways are developing, aren't they?
Yeah, very much so. You know, like you said, the 3 teams have all committed to winning reserve grade side, which means the Welsh Senior Conference, the Premier Division, runs at, as it did last year, 6 teams. We've juggled the fixtures slightly because we've reintroduced the Nines Festival and a separate standalone competition, which will see the 3 Welsh Prem only clubs play the 3 CLS or Southern Conference clubs. Plus, for the first time, we'll be joined by North Wales Crusaders A, the Northwest Counties League, and one other team that come in who I can't disclose just yet.
Oh, exciting. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're all running junior sides as well. And the other thing we should talk about is the education system that's going on. The college game and the university game in South Wales and West Wales, that's been spearheaded by the likes of West Wales Raiders. And that's starting to bear fruit as well.
The system's been in place. The pathway's been in place, but it's just not really been pushed or coherent. It's been a little higgledy-piggledy, but fair play to Kim Williams especially, but also Peter Tiffin down at West Wales. They've rallied round. I've seen firsthand they're doing a lot of work with Swansea University, the University of South Wales, Coleg Cymoedd, and now there's a clear pathway to that Champion Schools programme and a community club game into hopefully professional contracts. Made easier, of course, by one of our own, Regan Grace, tearing it up at the top of the Super League try scoring charts, making people aware that actually there's a system in place and it does work.
You talked about Kim Williams, and there's been obviously results on the pitch for West Wales Raiders haven't necessarily gone the way the club would have liked in the last couple of years. But behind the scenes, people like Kim, they are putting the miles in, aren't they? And they are putting the effort in. And, you know, when I spoke to the likes of Torvine Tigers just recently, they can't speak more highly enough of him and what Andrew Fawn's doing at the club as well. How important is it to have West Wales Raiders and North Wales Crusaders as well as the professional route into the game?
Well, it just helps having being able to offer that presence on your doorstep, because, you know, obviously the thought of moving to London or the south of France or Yorkshire or Lancashire to pursue a professional career is daunting to a lot of 17, 18-year-olds. So knowing they can still play at a higher level within South Wales is definitely a nice carrot to be able to dangle.
And just before we go, Rob, we do need to mention as well the launch of the charity magazine as well. Lots of stuff going into that and all going to a good cause too.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I think when Danny Jones unfortunately passed away, it was a shock for everyone, just sort of the nature of it. So I've done some real good work there to try and spread the use of defibrillators to hopefully avoid repeat occurrences of that. But the other one, Scott Besant, like slightly closer to home, I played with Scott at club level and coached him briefly as well. So yeah, it's a shame what's happened, and you know, I know Taurine Tigers have been done as much as they can to try and raise awareness of what's happened and raise some funds for it, and hopefully a charity mag can highlight the issue further and hopefully start to bring some closure and normality back to the family's life.
Absolutely. And for more information on the charity mag, WRL Charity Mag on Twitter. And the magazine will be available at Torvine Tigers against Swindon St George, as well as Halifax against Barrow Raiders in the coming weeks. But Rob Davis, a big thank you for joining us from Wales Rugby League. You keep up the good work, and we'll speak to you soon, my friend.
Thank you, Ben. Always a pleasure.
Rob Davis there from Wales Rugby League joining us. He was on his holidays, so a big thank you to Rob for joining us. But it is slowly building, and a certain try scorer who keeps scoring tries at St Helens surprised everyone that he's got a really strong Welsh accent.
That is the best recommendation for Welsh development, isn't it? You look at Regan Grace, and he's one of lots of really good wingers in Super League at the moment. I mean, it was interesting that Gary Schofield in League Express a week or so ago spotlighted wingers and picked out six wingers who could play for, you know, Great Britain in this autumn's tour. And actually, Regan Grace wasn't one of the six, which is quite remarkable, really. If there are six wingers better than Regan Grace, we're in a pretty good place, aren't we, I think?
I think there probably are six wingers better than him at the minute. I don't that, you know, it's a sign of where we are. But on Wales, I know he's not Welsh by birth, but Morgan Knowles, probably the most informed forward in Super League at the minute.
Yeah. Isn't it good, though, for
Scotland?
Yeah, Lachlan Coote, Scotland, yeah.
Isn't it good for Rugby League that, you know, despite rugby union going pro in the last 20 years or so, we're managing to find ways to still tap that well.
Absolutely. Oh, yes. And I tell you what, fair play to Regan Grace. That try that he scored, his hat-trick try in the Good Friday Derby, was Jason Robinson-esque, the turn of pace.
It was
phenomenal.
It beat Zach Hardacre so easily, didn't he?
Burned him.
Absolutely.
But on the Lions front, with Grace, I think wingers in international rugby league are yardage. That is what they are used for, and I don't think he's in the top six for yardage.
No, I think that's fair.
Just before we go to any other business, just to mention for that 100 months of Rugby League in Wales magazine, all proceeds going to Scots Angels and Danny Jones defibs. We should say visit the website walesrugbyleague.co.uk/magazine to order your copy, and I think a copy is available at Halifax this weekend as well. Let's go on to any other business then, and where do you want to start? Shall we start with Backchat?
Yeah, Mick Hogan, David Longo, and I'm joking, Martin, were on this week. There's some good points made on Easter in particular by Mick. Yeah, good.
The only team that didn't have a game over the Easter period, Newcastle Thunder.
Yeah.
Which is a mixed blessing, I think, from his point of view.
But some good comments on how rugby league's moving towards an events culture.
Yeah.
Which I think's important. I think that's something we've spoke about a lot. As a sport for a long time, and finally the clubs and the Super League and RFL are making something of it, so it's good to see, I think.
And new Rugby League World out, I think, as well this week.
Yep, Lachlan Coote the cover star, and then there's all the various goodies, that just randomness from Ash Hope, and I still think that he makes up some of these stories are that ridiculous, but they are apparently true. Looking forward to this one coming out, say Lachlan Coote on the cover. I think one thing you find when you do this, Rugby League still probably lacks cover stars at times, you know, that the identifiable people. I think it is becoming slightly easier.
which is a good thing.
Mm, absolutely.
And we should also mention, before we go, we did touch upon it there with Rob, the Southern Conference launches this weekend, a great initiative, basically installing Step 4 in the South, and loads of clubs, including Hemel Stags, and not gone to Ottawa in full, the community side, Hemel Stags, and loads of London clubs, and All Golds as well, and the Welsh sides as well. So a big good luck to everyone taking part in that, and congratulations as well to Featherstone Lionesses and Keighley Albion on their success in their various Women's Cup finals this past weekend. At League Express on Monday, back up to date.
Absolutely, yes. Everything. It's a late night for us on Sunday because Toronto Wolfpack are kicking off their home game against Swinton Lions at seven. Five past seven.
I wish I'd recorded me telling Martin that his face.
So that's going to, you know, make it late for us. But that's just one of the burdens we've got to bear. But you know, everything else in the game. There'll be a special tribute, by the way, to Neil Fox, who celebrates his 80th birthday on May the 4th. Alex Murphy celebrated his 80th this Easter Monday. And Big Neil, who's of course the record point scorer in rugby league, it's incredible to think he's going to be 80, to be honest. I still think of him as a, you know, guy in his early 20s scoring points for fun. But that's how it goes. We all get older.
And Aaron, from The Guardian and League Express, of course. Anything coming up in your world in the next 7 days or so?
Yeah, loads of stuff. Just wait and find out. What I would say, Women's Super League this weekend, Cass Leeds.
Wow.
Both unbeaten. Should be a great game. Probably the game of the weekend. You know, disappointing it's not Headingley. You know, it would have been great to see it as a curtain raiser, but, you know, that's not to be. But I think the standard in the Women's Super League this year has been great. Really enjoyed watching it. So, yeah, that would be something.
I'd really like to see more double headers.
Yeah,
me too. With the women, because it is, look, ultimately, the priority for four reporters is still going to be going to Super League and Championship games. I think if we can find a way to, again, make these an event, I think that would benefit the profile and exposure that Women's Super League gets.
Sure.
I mean, we are going to cover a bit more Women's Super League when there's a couple more results on the board. But yeah, onwards and upwards, that's going to be a great encounter this weekend. But that's us over and done with for this week's Total Rugby League show. TotalRL.com, the place to go for all the latest breaking news. Martin Sadler, big thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
Matthew Shaw, big thanks.
As ever.
And Aaron Barrett,
thank you
for joining us. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye bye.